There were a few slips of paper on which mother had noted a few things. I was typing them out. Do I make myself heard? And I thought some of them would be of interest to you. So before I part with the sheets, I think I could share them with you. We never know unless she has put the dates when she wrote. But they were all small slips she used to write. And some would be given for typing and some would stay there. Now, the avatar, the supreme divine manifested in an earthly form, generally a human form, for a definite purpose. Next, written in 1932. These are answers to questions of a girl. What is liberty? Liberty is to depend only on the divine. What is the divine? The divine is what you adore in Sri Aurobindo. Then, there we are, Lord. It is those very people to whom you have shown most love who make you responsible for their difficulties. Next, get rid of all violence and you will no longer have any fear. Question. Why was not man created good from the beginning? It is not God who made man wicked. It is man who makes himself wicked by separating himself from God. Then it is March 1952. Who are you? Says the adverse force. I am the impartial and truthful mirror in which everyone finds his own real image. There is no fire that can be compared with passion, no misfortune equal to hatred, no misery comparable with the agitation of the mind. He who follows the steep path that climbs the heights can easily slip down into the abyss. On the road of the ascending evolution, everyone is free to choose the direction he will take. The swift and steep climb towards the summits of truth to the supreme realization, or turning his back to the peaks, the easy descent to the interminable meanders of endless incarnations. In the course of time, and even in the course of your present life, you can make your choice once for all, irrevocably, and then you have only to confirm it with every new occasion. Or else, if you do not take a definitive decision immediately, you will have to choose anew at each moment between falsehood and the truth. 58. Last night I had the vision of what this supramental world could become if men were not sufficiently prepared. The confusion existing at present upon earth is nothing in comparison with what could take place. Imagine that every powerful will has the power to transform matter as it likes. If the sense of collective unity did not grow in proportion to the development of power, the resulting conflict would be yet more acute and chaotic than our material conflicts. Another, 1958. Every outer change must be the spontaneous and inevitable expression of an inner transformation. Normally, every improvement of the condition of physical life must be the flowing out on the surface of a progress realized internally. In the ashram, one must do only what one may do publicly, for nothing remains hidden. As for my protection, it is equally over all and not over some as against the others. You cannot expect another to be perfect unless you are yourself perfect. To be perfect is to be exactly what the Supreme Lord wants you to be. Very few, in fact, especially in an age like ours, in which success alone counts and the material satisfactions it brings. However, an ever-increasing number of dissatisfied people are seeking to know the reason of life. And on the other hand, there are sages who know and strive to help suffering humanity and to spread the light of knowledge. When the two meet, he who knows and he who wants to know, there springs up a new hope in the world, and a little light penetrates the prevailing darkness. Does one enter a temple with dirty feet? In the same way, one does not enter the temple of the spirit with an unclean mind. When I say that I have initiated someone, I mean that I have revealed myself to this person without words, and that he was capable of seeing, feeling, and knowing what I am. It is their mental and vital formation of me that they love. It is not myself. More and more am I faced with this fact. 54. Everyone has made for himself an image of me in conformity with his needs and desires. And it is with this image that he is in contact. It is through this that he receives what few universal forces and still less supramental forces succeed in filtering through all these formations. Unfortunately, these people cling to my physical presence. Otherwise, I could withdraw into my inner solitude and from there do my work quietly and freely. But this physical presence is for them a symbol, and that is why they cling to it. For, in fact, they have very little real contact with what my body truly is and with the formidable accumulation of conscious energy it represents. And now, O Supreme Force, now that you descend into me and penetrate more and more totally all the atoms of my body, the distance between me and everything around me seems to increase more and more. And more do I feel as though I were floating in an atmosphere of radiant consciousness which completely escapes their understanding. Next, since I love only you, O Lord, it is you alone whom I love in all and in each one. And by dint of loving you in them, I shall end up by making them a little conscious of you. For them, the real thing is to know how to let themselves be loved without any preference and obstruction. But not only do they not want to be loved except in their own way, they do not want also to open themselves to love unless it comes to them through the intermediary of their choice. And what could be done in a few hours, a few months, or a few years takes centuries to be accomplished. Then, this is important, 54 September. The body repeats constantly and with a poignant sincerity, "What am I to demand anything whatsoever from anyone at all? Left to myself, I am nothing. I know nothing. I can do nothing. Unless the truth penetrates into me and directs me, I am incapable of taking even the minutest decision and of knowing what is the best thing to do and to live even in the most insignificant circumstance. Shall I ever be capable of being transformed to the point of becoming what I ought to be and of manifesting what wants to manifest upon earth? But why does this answer always come from the depths, from you, O Lord, with an indisputable certitude? If you cannot do it, no other body upon earth can do it. There is but one conclusion. I shall persist in my effort without giving in. I shall persist until death or until victory." You would have noticed her humility, her courage, and her minute loyalty to truth. And many times I feel, when I read these things, if half of them were known, the behavior of people would have been quite different, isn't it? It was not to be. Well, to come back to our subject, the divine Shakti. We have seen that the instruments being prepared, perfected, they are to be operated by a power of God. Normally, it is a power in ignorance, nature as we call it, that moves. But for a seeker who consecrates himself to the divine and wants to be possessed by the divine and made an instrument for the manifestation, it is the power of the divine Shakti, that is to function. What we are normally conscious of, what moves us and operates in our instrumental personality is what is called Prakriti. But what a seeker should aim at is the power of the soul. Now the power of the soul and the power in ignorance are not really two different things. There is one power, the divine power, the power of the Purusha, the power of the soul. But when the same power has to work in the midst of ignorance, with the instrumentation of unpurified faculties or limbs, it becomes Prakriti. Prakriti, as Sri Aurobindo has described it elsewhere, is the executive force of the divine power. When we look round in the universe, we do perceive a power functioning, an energy, universal energy at different levels, throwing out its waves, its currents. But it is more or less a mechanical force, an energy that propels itself. And one begins to doubt whether there is any soul at all, whether there is any consciousness, or it is simply a mechanical energy that appears to be so when we look only outside. But should we bother a little to look into ourselves, the subjective experience that we get indicates a different conclusion. We become aware of an energy, of a force, true, but we also become conscious of something that we may call I, something that is not totally involved and lost in the working of the force or energy. There is an I that observes, that sanctions, that may even get involved. And there is an energy, a force that acts now as physical energy, now as life force, now as mental energy, and so on. This is called the duality of nature and soul. Different explanations are given of this fact of nature and soul. Those of you who have read essays in the Gita are familiar with the Sankhya explanation, to which Sri Aurobindo has devoted a chapter in the essays. The Sankhyas speak of a Prakriti, nature, comprising three moors, three gunas, that comes into operation the moment it is face to face with the Purusha. The Purusha himself is inert. He does not move. But in the presence of the Prakriti, which goes into action when placed in the presence of the Purusha seems to move. He reflects the activity, and the Prakriti reflects the consciousness of the Purusha. There is a mutual reflection, and the game goes on. There is another approach which speaks of a dual being in us, the higher self and the lower self. The lower self, ourselves, immersed or involved in the lower nature, and the higher being or higher self, which is free from it. And of this double existence, we become aware when we rise beyond the normal, the level of the normal thinking mind. There we become aware of the dual beinginess. However, whether in terms of Sankhya or in terms of the dual being of which I spoke just now, when one goes deeper by yogic methods or self-observation, one comes to realize that this duality is only a phenomenal experience. It is not an original experience. It is when we move into phenomena, when we look into phenomena, that there is a duality. And this fact of duality being only a result, a part of the phenomena, becomes patent when we get experience higher than what the normal mind can yield. When something of the spiritual mind, or there is some reflection of the soul, light of the soul, we get this experience. As this experience of yoga organizes itself, repeats itself, becomes natural to us, we realize that the energy, the force that works is nothing else than the power of the soul, the spirit, the divine being, the Purushottama, who presides and oversees the whole universal movement. And necessarily, this force, this power shares the character of the soul. It is conscious. It is self-directing. But the appearance of mechanism, mechanical nature, is only its front. It only appears to the surface vision. But when we go deep, we do discover, as even modern science has begun to perceive, that there is some principle that is conscious, that is self-aware, that is directing. If the soul is not always conscious that the force that it wields is the divine force, that the life that it leads is divine life or potentially divine, it is because the soul limits itself in ego experience. Each one of us shuts himself in the walls erected by the ego, sets himself separate from other beings, and loses the true sight of unity, the true sight of the true character of the power. If by any means we can replace our egoistic will that limits the power, the operation of the power, veils the true consciousness, and replaces this egoistic will by a universal will, we become conscious also that the power that acts, whether within ourselves or in the universe, is a universal Shakti, the power of God. But this Shakti is not outside in the universe alone. It is also there in the individual, because the individual is not separate from the universe. What is there is here, and what is here is there. All that can be said is, the universe individuates itself in different forms to give a certain acuteness to the experience of life. And this universal Shakti, which is also in man, is mostly hidden. Only a part of it operates, or we are conscious of its operation on our surface being. The bulk of it is stored in us, is hidden, involved, and waits to be tapped, waits to be evoked by appropriate methods. And it can truly go into movement only when the body, the mind, and the life vehicle are prepared and become strong enough to sustain and support the unrolling of the universal Shakti embedded in man. And in the Indian tradition, this Shakti is called the Kundalini Shakti, and the same Shakti in the universe is called the Mahakundali. It is the same, but here stored in an individual scheme and there spread out on a universal canvas, universal field. How to become conscious of the stored up energy, the force within ourselves? The first step is to know that the life energy which normally operates in us, upholding our body, upholding the operations of the mind, is only a fragment of the total life energies, life force kept at our disposal. We utilize only a fragment, and we are limited in our effectivity. If we can open our doors, free our channels to the inflow of the life energy from the sea of life energy around us, then we can become aware of the immense potentialities on every level of our being that still wait to be tapped. By opening ourselves to the universal life force, by linking our individual life force with that, a means of communication can be established. In the traditional yogas, this is done by pranayama and other exercises, as in the Raja Yoga or the Bhatta Yoga. Sri Aurobindo points out that it is also possible to do it by the exercise of concentration and application of our higher mental will. It is possible to exert that will, purify the nerve channels, and consciously invoke the life, larger life force to flow into us. And that is not the end. For even then, even if we start receiving the universal life force, it is not the highest form of force or energy that the divine Shakti takes in the universe. It is only a lower formulation. Higher than the life energy, there is the mental energy, the pure mental energy that seeks to express itself, impose itself on the physical and life energies, give them a direction, stamp its will. And corresponding to this mental energy is a mental consciousness, a higher mental consciousness, wide, intense, powerful, which can control even the sea of life force around and make it do what it wills. Normally what happens is our mental energies and life energies are hopelessly mixed up. The mental will and the will in the life force, vital will, they either are either at war with each other or one subjugates the other and both are mixed up. In yoga, it is a necessary part of the self-observation and practice to disentangle the mind from the life force, the activities of life force, the activities of desire, passion, ambition, all the vital movements through which the life force throws itself out for domination. The mind has to be trained to detach itself and disinvolve itself from these entanglements. And still higher than the mental energy is the pure energy of the spirit, the spiritual energy. When one is in a happy position to feel the working of this higher power of the spirit, one becomes conscious of both the Purusha and the Prakriti in their purified aspects. It is here, when the higher power of the spirit starts working, that Prakriti is seen to be not something different from the Purusha, but the power of the Purusha, or the Purusha himself as power, the Purusha as Prakriti. And once the initial detachment is effected between the Purusha and the Prakriti, the Purusha can exercise his will on the movements of Prakriti very spontaneously and actively. And when this is done, the ascending soul, the aspiring soul, can take up a number of positions. One is, in the light of this experience, that all is a working of the power of the spirit, one can elevate the mental life, the mind-governed life that one normally leads, to the highest level of the mind, the sattvic level. Enlightened, calm, balanced, reflecting the higher light, that is one. That is a state which many have attained or can attain. The second is to normalize the spiritual consciousness, to subject everything to the choice and working of the soul. the spiritual element in us. Whether this spiritual light covers the entire area or only a select area is another matter. One can also choose to acquire and rest in silence, the static aspect. Let the outer nature carry on, ignore it, but ourselves be concentrated in that silence, aiming at an eventual nirvana. But it is also possible, as in this teaching, that basing ourselves on this silence, one begins to act, one begins to open up the higher levels of the being dynamically to the heights leading to the supramental. But this basis of silence is indispensable. And in all these steps, human will alone is not enough. One has to summon the aid of a higher power. Call it what you will, see it where you will, maybe through the teacher, maybe through a direct evocation, whatever it is, a power different and higher than the human power is necessary to evoke, establish and normalize the higher levels or higher states of being nearer and approaching the supramental. And in this process, the mind becomes conscious of the higher levels of the being on the side of the Purusha or on the side of Prakriti. When it becomes conscious more and more on the side of the Purusha according to its line of evolution, one realizes the Divine as the One Self, the Supreme Being, the Purushottam. That is the reality, that is the sole truth. But if one realizes the higher aspect of Prakriti in the Divine, one becomes aware of the vast force, a great power, the cosmic Mahashakti. Though these two realizations are alternately possible, it is also possible, if we lay a stress on integration, to have this double oneness. Both the Self and the Mahashakti, both the Purushottama and the Mahashakti can be realized in one, by one soul. And actually, the individual soul is intended to provide this meeting place, this junction for the Purusha, Supreme Purusha and the Supreme Shakti to meet and manifest. The individual is the nodus. The soul is the center through which the Purusha and the Shakti or the enlightened Prakriti can manifest. Here again, one cannot act on one soul. One has to call in the Mahashakti, who knows, who has the total wisdom to effect the integration. Now to emphasize this aspect and there to emphasize another, and when to integrate both the aspects in a supreme unity.
And that their own claim is used in any way, I will call Lord, just
Even the question of law, whether law is only on the material plane and things are fluid on other planes, the question is, the truth is not so simple. There is a law governing the whole universe from the bottom to the top. Each plane has its own law. The material law does not operate in the life plane. The life law does not operate on the mental plane. But in life, in our universe, what happens? All the planes are intermingled. In man, for instance, all the planes are intermingled, all the seven planes are in us. So where are we going to say, now this is matter and this is life? The body itself, physical body, there is life force in it, there is the mind in it. So it is, I won't say a hodgepodge, but a conglomeration of so many laws. It depends where we put our weight, where we live more. If we live more in the material consciousness, we are bound to the rigidity of material laws. If by nature we are more prone to sail with the life force, to feel light, then you can say we are less rigid, more fluidic, more open to changes. But that itself is not an advantage. Somewhere a ballast is required. So it is a divine intention to balance one with the other. Rigidity gets less, but immediately there is the other thing. There is too much of fluidity. So the mind comes in to keep a balance between rigidity and too much of fluency. The mind wants to keep a balance. In the process, the mind may be absorbed by the tamas of the body or the movement of the life force. It is as one evolves, progresses in evolution, that one learns the trick, one learns the art and the science of harmonizing all the different laws in service of the progress of the soul.
Knowledge of the law and material law that we call rigid knowledge of where they can be rigid would come when one shows the inner being with universal acceptance?
Yes. It can come as we open to the universal consciousness. It can also come when we begin to grow consciously within ourselves. Instead of being led by our habits, when we start disciplining ourselves, self-observation, self-modification and self-practice, as Sri Aurobindo observed in one of the earlier chapters of the synthesis, we know to what extent we are still held by the material rigidity, to what extent we are tossed about by the life, loss of the life force, in which vital imagination plays such a great part, or the mental laws, limiting things, looking at things from narrow points of view in the beginning, before it can have a wider vision. All these yield themselves when one begins to observe, self-observation, self-discrimination. Universal consciousness is a must. After an individual acquires a sufficient solidity of stature, of self-awareness, next step is to widen out, to spread out in the universal dimension. If one does it too prematurely, one is just swept away. Yes. Even in the universal consciousness, you are not free from the operation of the lower prakriti. Lower prakriti extends up to the levels of the spirit, where the spiritual mind begins. Till then, the ignorance, rule of ignorance prevails, and the universe is within the triple formula of ignorance. We begin to get released as we ascend the spiritual levels. The power does not wait till you come to that level. Even when you are striving, there are flashes of light, there are emanations of that power that come to you and give you an opportunity to acclimatize yourself to them, and they in turn help you also to rise above this hold of ignorance. That is, and precisely it is these visitations that are called spiritual experiences. When they are organized and built up into permanent form, they become realizations.